Good evening, IT entrepreneurs, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Joe Panettiere, content czar for afternines.com. Thanks for joining us each Tuesday night at 9:01 p.m. Eastern and sometimes in between. Now, on to podcast episode 30, my conversation with Silicon Harlem co-founders Bruce Lincoln and Clayton Banks. We discuss how their organization is transforming Harlem, New York, into a technology innovation hub for local citizens and startups alike. Let's jump right into it. Give me the big picture. What is Silicon Harlem?
Thanks, Joe, and it's great to be on your show here. Silicon Harlem is designed to transform Harlem into a tech and innovation hub. And what that essentially means is we are creating an atmosphere where tech companies want to do business, where startups find it conducive to create new innovation, and of course the investment capital being attracted to help propel all of that in our community. So we've worked really hard to establish co-working spaces. When we started in 2013, believe it or not, there were zero co-working spaces in Harlem.
None. Wow.
And now, after 2 years of our operation, we've actually have six co-working spaces distributed through Harlem.
Now, when you say co-working spaces, are these for startups or existing businesses or internships? What is are the actual use cases for the shared spaces?
Well, they primarily cater to freelance workers as well as small two, three-person shop startups that are looking to they haven't quite got to the cash flow they need to afford an office, but they have enough momentum to get inside of a space like a co-working space, to get their idea moving. So the great thing about a co-working space is you get to meet and network with people that are also in a similar state of business where they're starting out, trying to figure out what's the next step. And so you have an opportunity to network. Perhaps there's somebody in a co-working space that's a patent lawyer.
Right.
So you have that accessibility. And so for young people or anybody who's starting out a business, unlike myself, when I started my business a long time ago, I had to open up a whole office that cost an arm and a leg. If I would have had an opportunity to go into a co-working space and get my operation built, I would have saved a lot of money, and that would have probably propelled me even faster. So, Yeah, the co-working spaces cater to a lot of people, but primarily your startups and your freelance workers.
Got it. Okay, thanks for that clarification. Hey, you know, it occurs to me, our listeners are obviously across America, but many of them are international as well. So for those listeners who aren't familiar with where Harlem physically is, paint the picture for us. Where is it? Because I bet you a lot of our listeners are thinking about potentially expanding their businesses into the New York scene, and they could use a little bit of a virtual map from you.
Well, one thing about Harlem is it has an international reputation, and it's basically Upper Manhattan.
Yep.
It's 110th Street all the way up to the top of Manhattan. Sort of classically, it's defined by 125th Street from Madison Avenue over to 8th Avenue, and then up to 155th Street and Amsterdam Avenue, which at that point gets called Washington Heights. When you go east of Central Harlem, then that's Spanish Harlem, El Barrio. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, the area that Silicon Harlem focuses on is inclusive of all of Upper Manhattan. We, in fact, have our own contiguous empowerment zone.
That's fantastic stuff. Bruce, thanks for painting the picture. Just want to clarify for our listeners, Bruce is the one giving us the physical layout here, and Clayton was the one who opened up the conversation just talking about what is Silicon Harlem. So what sparked the original idea for Silicon Harlem? I mean, who had the brainstorm, and then how did you get it going?
Well, it goes back to a number of projects that Clayton and I collaborated on when I was at the Institute for Learning Technologies at Teachers College at Columbia, and Clayton was starting up Ember Media. And what we began to do was develop these initiatives that really focused on broadband.
Hmm.
And in 2008, 2009, when the Obama administration began the broadband stimulus program,
sure,
we pulled together a major proposal led by the School of Engineering, where I was then located, and with a number of key community organizations, and we developed Silicon Harlem. The idea then was to develop telework centers that would be connected via very high-speed internet connections as a way to create the digital workforce.
Right.
We didn't get funded. It was a $90 million project. The grant for geographical considerations went to the city of New York. But then with the development of another project we worked on called Miami Studios, we then had a 20,000 square foot space, which was sort of the perfect place to restart it.
Nice.
And we restarted as a meetup.
Yeah. And when you quote unquote started it as a meetup, what time frame was that?
That was February 26th of 2013. We actually just had our 2-year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Last month.
Fantastic. Hey, you know, I do want to talk about the broadband issue just a little bit more. I don't know if you know this about my background, but I actually dabbled on a website with a few friends in the industry. It was called Muni Wireless. That site is still going strong. It covers municipal broadband. And, you know, for years there's been this whole debate. Hey, what are the incumbents, the big cable providers, doing about broadband and universal access? Hey, what are municipalities going to do? And then what are the nonprofits going to do? And who's sort of in the driver's seat here and going to make it all good for all of us? So I've certainly watched that debate. And now you got New York City talking about, you know, transforming all these phone booths into wireless access points. And, hey, it's going to be great for all of us. But let's rewind it back to Silicon Harlem. Do you feel as if the geography now has that broadband capability so that in your shared workspaces here, connectivity is no longer the limiting factor, so to speak? Have we made enough progress in that area?
We've made some progress, Joe, but not enough because of the rapidity of the growth of the tech sector. One of the things they found is all of these spaces – in terms of the growth of these companies requires not simply, you know, the sort of broadband that's more on the narrow band side, but we have to really start to think about gigabit speed and bandwidth.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, the city lags.
Yeah.
We have an initiative called Gigabit Harlem where we've been working with the local incumbents, with Verizon. We've been now talking to Comcast about how to address that situation. But you still see it on the residential side and certainly on the side of local businesses that they just don't have the bandwidth that they need because every business now is an internet business.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know?
The entrance to your business is the internet these days. That's exactly right. It's your front door.
And I would add, Joe, that probably from your own experience, you realize this is that there's a lack of education around broadband.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of us that talk about it and speak about it, and a lot of times we speak about it in terms of speed, but the reality is that the average resident and even perhaps even some of your listeners don't know the definition of broadband,
mm-hmm.
at least as defined by the U.S. government.
Yeah, and it's been a while since I looked at that definition, but isn't that definition actually disappointing, especially compared to where other countries are with their definitions?
That's an understatement. You know, before January, the speed on the books was 5 down and 1 up.
Right.
Megabyte.
Yeah.
So now Tom Wheeler and the FCC updated it to be 25 megabytes down and 5 megabytes up. And if that ranks us probably around 20th or 21st in the world in terms of our definition of broadband, when we went from 5.1 to 25.5, we probably went from 95% having access to broadband to down to 88% having access to broadband. So that's why these things are sort of tricky.
Yeah.
But the reality is we need to have more and more education around broadband and the use of broadband because it goes beyond speed. We have to also share with our community, and this is where Silicon Harlem becomes very important, you know, sort of the applications and services that can be developed and run
right
as a result of broadband that will, you know, create economic development.
Well, that's exactly the point. I think you just hit it dead on. This whole idea that if you're going to be opening these shared workspaces, you get the startups in, the actual infrastructure platform better not be a limiting factor in the creativity and growth of these companies, so to speak. So what type of creativity, excuse me, and sparks of innovation have you seen so far in Silicon Harlem? What are you seeing?
Yeah, well, there's been a bunch of great new startups that are sort of growing out of Silicon Harlem. We're virtually incubating, you know, roughly 10 or so startups. Everything from, I've just had a call with Free ATM, the group of guys that are creating a solution so that you never have to pay fees for getting money out of an ATM machine.
I think all of our listeners just leaned in on that one. Sounds like a good one.
Yeah. We have another interesting startup that is called Spare Chair, which is looking at co-working space from a virtual perspective, meaning and from an individual home and apartment perspective. So if you're looking for a space to work, and you're maybe from out of town and you just need a place to work, you can go on their website and find someone's home or apartment that you can go in and work for, you know, $10 or something like that. So there's great new innovations that are coming out of Silicon Harlem that we're really proud of. Yeah. I can go on and on. Frankly, there's people that are working on, you know, faster ways to access information. I just got off the phone with another one of our startups that's looking at how to maximize restaurant dead time. So when restaurants are most slow or at their slowest, his application, you can actually reserve at that time. You get 50% off your meal.
Right.
All types of really cool monetizable ideas that are coming out of Silicon Harlem. So if people want to start a new business and they want to be in the tech sector, I think before you rush out to Silicon Valley, you might want to literally think about Silicon Harlem. Don't forget, we have Wall Street on the island. So, yeah. You know, you got Wall Street and Harlem on the same island. We're starting to connect.
Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. Now, tell me about the evolution here. Do you guys see yourselves as a bit of an incubator, an accelerator, and maybe even an angel investment firm helping these companies along? I mean, where are the lines here in terms of what you think you'll do and what you think you won't do?
Well, I think that's a good way to describe where we are at this point in our development. And so we have companies that are, you know, spawning themselves in co-working spaces, but quickly they need to get developed to the point where they can be investable.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at building an innovation center where we can sort of have housed in that space the entire life cycle as far as a support service that will grow those companies. So we're looking at incubation and acceleration. We're also looking at supporting mom and pops so that they can come in there and figure out how to now develop that website, you know, that lets them get out to a broader audience. Because one of the things that we're aware of, and Clayton makes this point very clearly, is that for every tech job, that equals 5 jobs that fall within the support system of those higher paying kind of positions.
Yep.
So it really is an ecosystem that we're trying to develop. And then not to minimize this role of how we connect back to the universities and build that connection from the university R&D departments to the larger companies. So we do this type of sponsored venture development. So we also want to make sure we're innovating as far as the network, but also innovating around all the applications and the services and even educational programs that can support the young people.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are, quote unquote, incubating people in terms of their knowledge and where they can go with their lives as well.
Yeah, we have, like I said, you know, we're not yet cradle to grave, but we do have a very successful high school program where under Clayton's instruction, we worked with 20 top young people who either lived or attended school in Harlem. And in 7 weeks, we taught them how to build their own tech companies. And we even were able to raise a small angel investment fund. So every student received a check at the end of the program. And it's propelled them as far as being the top students in their schools and some of the top candidates getting into some of the top schools. We have early action admittances around a young lady who got into Smith, a young man that got accepted on the same day by St. Francis College and Manhattanville. And basically they sent an admissions officer to meet with this young man at his school and on the spot admitted him. So we have those kinds of stories. So that what you start to see is the development of not only the sector, but the leadership that will drive it forward and increase diversity.
Yeah. And not only that, you're helping people who ultimately I think will continue to give back. If someone born and raised in Harlem, then has success in Harlem, they're going to plant even deeper roots there and bring more success to that area, but also spread the word of what's going on and maybe create these virtual companies that spread out across America and beyond. It sounds very exciting.
Just to talk about the young people, after they went through this program, you know, they learned how to deal with issues of working together, which is very important. They learned how to be a part of teams that were led by women. We consciously made it a mix of 12 young ladies and 8 young men. Mm-hmm. And then it became like best friends. So they stay in touch. And they all said they have much more confidence in terms of in their classes and just relating to adults. But these kids can go and speak to a VC and pitch.
That's fantastic stuff. Wow, what a great story so far. So a couple more questions for you about this. What are the big priorities for the remainder of 2015 with Silicon Harlem?
Well, we have a real sort of focus for the next 2 years, really, and that is to, this will be sort of the first big audience to hear this. Bruce and I have a very serious vision, Joe, to build an innovation center right in the middle of Harlem. Okay. And that innovation center...
How will that differ from what you've already done with the shared space? What is an innovation center?
So innovation center has a few components to it. There's certainly the co-working component, and that's important to have. But for us, we look at it as a way for us to formally incubate new ideas and new companies. So it's really important for us to have almost an application process for startups to come in, receive space, and at the same time receive resources and take advantage of the experience that Bruce has and that I have and that you have and others that can help these companies become the next Facebook or Twitter. Mm-hmm. So, and then the third component is, as we discussed, the acceleration, where we actually have partnerships with VCs around the world to fund these ideas and get them in the position where they can spin out of our innovation center and hopefully root themselves in the community. Mm-hmm. And then finally, it's a space for the community to continue to learn, educate, get what they need to, you know, sort of foster this tech community and make sure that we are, you know, the desired location for ideas, for living, and all of that. It sort of transforms your community. So if this space can do all of that, along with host events and et cetera, then we think we have a sustainable model that will keep Harlem in the vein of a Silicon Harlem, much the way Silicon Valley has been able to sustain itself.
Oh, great vision. Love it. Hey, question for you on one of the points you brought up. I think you mentioned that, hey, you know, it's great for the younger crowd to aspire to build the next Facebook and or Twitter. But I also want to set some expectations out there. You know, as you look at the headlines out there, I think there are now – the Wall Street Journal, I think, is tracking almost 100 companies that have billion-dollar valuations that haven't gone public yet, right? And everyone's chasing these quote-unquote unicorns. And I just want to help you guys sort of give us a reality check out there. How big of an idea do you think – the younger crowd needs to have to start working in your shared workspaces to get into your incubator down the road? You know, there's plenty of $5, $10, and $15 million companies out there. There's thousands of them that we don't hear about, yet they're incredibly successful and growing. Are those numbers reasonable to think about for the up and coming entrepreneurs, or does everyone have to have the $1 billion dream?
Well, I think a $1 billion dream is cool because that's part of the culture that these young people grow up in. But we have to give them the on-ramp to where they can potentially get there. But we also have to show them it's okay to fail.
Right.
And so that's why we developed the Apps Youth Leadership Academy. So we've got and you can go to YouTube and look at their presentations, which they made, they actually have ideas that could be grown, but they come out of their own culture and problems that they've seen. So I think the idea is that we really have to grow these homegrown entrepreneurs and help them understand what that means. And we don't see it simply as you're going to create the next billion-dollar idea. You might be that next brilliant scientist who's going to go into nanotech or digital content. So we want to give them that broad range of potential opportunity, especially if it's in line with the history of the cultural innovation of Harlem.
Fantastic stuff.
I would add, Joe, that you're making a good point. Now, not everyone's going to become a multi-billion dollar company, but what I think is important is that, especially for some of the millennials and younger, that they have good mentorship, that they have good stewardship, and that will help them be realistic with their plans. So it's really important that this becomes, we don't want to get in the way of anyone's great idea, but we want to make sure that we are helping to steer them towards success.
Right.
And that success can be defined way beyond dollars, right? So there are some people that might be working on social innovation. There may not be a lot of money in it, but there may be a lot of good in it that's going to help the entire economic development of a community. So we want to foster all of that talent. Innovation has no dollar amount. Mm. Innovation has one thing, and that's to move things forward.
Fantastic point. Well, Clayton and Bruce, I can't thank you both enough for joining me today. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Joe. It's been great to be on the show.
To appear in a podcast and discuss your business strategy, contact Amy Katz for sponsorship information. That's Amy at afternines.com. Remember to visit afternines.com daily to read our latest blogs or to subscribe to our newsletter. And remember to join us every Tuesday night at 9:01 p.m. Eastern for Good Evening IT Entrepreneurs. I'm Joe Panettiere, signing off for afternines.com.